This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. The World Meteorological Organization says that 2023 is set to finish as the planet's warmest year on record. That mark comes as world leaders are meeting for the United Nations annual climate summit known as COP28. Recently, the U.S. government's Global Change Research Program released its latest climate assessment report, highlighting the dangers of this rising global temperature for Wisconsin and the rest of the country. In our state, average temperatures are rising and extreme weather events are becoming more frequent, including droughts, floods, and excessive heat waves. These climate changes are already impacting Wisconsin in areas like agriculture, water management, infrastructure, and public health and safety. Our next guest has been researching ways to limit Wisconsin's contribution to climate emissions and to adapt to a changing climate. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you see the impacts of climate change in your life or your community? What areas are you most concerned about? Are you optimistic we can prevent further harms from climate change? Do you have questions for our guest about the latest research and what it means for Wisconsin's future? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. James Bolter is a professor of chemistry and chair of the Department of Public Health and Environmental Studies at UW-Eau Claire. Jim, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me. Nice to be here.
Now, I think for a long time we've talked about global warming and then about climate change as something that affects us in the future. We keep seeing reports that show it affecting us in the present. Can you talk about some recent examples of where we see climate change having an impact here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, well, you know, I think that's really been a major shift that we've observed in the past decade or so. And I think we're all, public opinion would definitely bear that out, that we're all feeling like we're experiencing climate change. I think locally, the one that people are most aware of is just the horrendous air quality we suffered from this summer. I know talking with my students and how many of them were personally affected by it. And I know we all know people in the community who maybe have underlying health concerns, asthma, an underlying heart disease or respiratory illness, for whom it was particularly problematic, right? So that would be a really sort of banner year for climate impacts here locally. But I think people who are close to the land will notice things like, you know, ice on dates are getting later and later. Ice off dates are getting sooner and sooner. We're seeing greater disparity between extreme dry and extreme wet. We saw that even this past summer, where we had, you know, a lot of drought throughout the spring, and then we sort of caught up during the summer with rainfall. So a lot of things like that.
The actual rising temperatures themselves, I've seen, I think it's in this new report and some data you shared with us. We might not notice the extreme heat because a lot of it is sneaking in, warmer nighttime temperatures, warmer winter temperatures. Can you talk about that stealth heat and the kind of impact it can have?
Yeah, well, you know, I think people a lot of times will see reports from the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the United Nations Committee of the World's Greatest Climate Experts, and they'll see reports that, wow, we've warmed 1.1 degrees. And they'll say, well, what's a degree, right? There's a couple different ways to answer that. One is, you know, a couple degrees when you're talking about your internal body temperature might be significant, right? But in terms of the climate impact, I think we're less concerned about the sort of global average temperatures and the fact that when we experience those increases in average temperatures, we also increase the frequency of the extremes. And that's, I think, where we're seeing more and more emphasis on the research as the models are able to bear this out, is that we're seeing more and more of the days over 90, in this part of the country, in the Southwest, we're seeing more and more days over 100, over 110. And those have really substantial health consequences.
And you look at farming and agriculture a fair amount, and timing is everything, I think, when it comes to temperatures and moisture, precipitation, things like that. What kind of worries do you have in the next few years, even when it comes to farming and the timing of things like when rain falls, when snow melts?
Well, you know, to be totally transparent here, well, I I do study agriculture in the sense of it's a part of the science of climate change. I am by no means an expert in agriculture, and I certainly won't pretend to be. But you know, the kinds of things that we're seeing is with extreme rainfalls, and I'm going to say this, but folks who are out in the fields will have experienced this and have a much better impression of this than I do. And I encourage them to call in, maybe even with their own experiences. But you know, with extreme rainfall events, you know, a couple of years ago, farmers having difficulty getting into their field for planting. And then we have an extreme drought event for you know, maybe a couple months. There's real concern with corn yields. And in fact, I think there was even some concern with corn yields this spring, certainly, although we did catch up quite a ways on precipitation and later in the summer. So it's that inconsistency. In fact, one of the outcomes from the latest national climate assessment, that NCA5 you mentioned earlier, was looking at exactly that. How frequently do we switch between extremely dry to extremely wet? So that sort of frequency of that climate flip within a single year. And even that's projected to increase with climate change.
Talking to Jim Boulter, chair of the Department of Public Health and Environmental Studies at UW-Eau Claire, looking at the latest report on the impact of climate change in the United States, with a focus on the Midwest region as well. You could join in at 800-642-1234. You heard Jim. We want to hear from farmers and gardeners and people who enjoy nature or get out on the ice and are waiting for ice to show up on lakes. If you've had a personal experience of climate variability, climate change that affects your way of life, your way of recreation, join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Jim, you've done some presentations on how Wisconsin can reduce its climate impact and also mitigate climate impact. What kind of things would be at the top of your list?
Well, you know, if the goal is to reach what is generally referred to as net zero, and I'll talk more about that in a moment, then, you know, there are solutions that are held in common across the country and across the world to some degree. So what is net zero, right? To reach net zero, and the target here is about 2050. So it's not that far off, right? 27 years or so. Net zero is the situation in which we are not putting any net greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. And that is, any remaining greenhouse gases that are emitted by human activities are taken up through some other actions. That means the complete phase out of fossil fuels. And that's a very difficult thing to even envision, right? We're so dependent on them. And to be fair, they have vastly improved our quality of life over time. And while they have incredibly negative environmental consequences in terms of the air we breathe, water quality, they have really been the primary factor that has determined what the modern developed world's lives look like. So how do we get there? There's four steps. Step one is first of all, we need to electrify everything. What does everything mean? Our cars? Sure. Yeah. Our hot water heaters? Definitely. Our stoves. Even our furnaces. And here, that's a hard thing to do. So we look at using heat pumps, air source and ground source heat pumps. So we electrify everything. Then we decarbonize the grid. What does that look like? Well, it means moving away from coal and natural gas to solar and wind and nuclear. And that's actually happening quite rapidly as it is, just because of the economics. And then finally, we need to, two last things. We need to decide what can't be electrified. And we need to then offset those emissions through some other way. And we also need to eliminate emissions of the other greenhouse gases, methane, nitrous oxide. And those are really important regionally because those are so often tied to agriculture.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Pat is with us in Madison. Pat, hello.
Hi. I just wanted to share an observation. And and get your input on it. But I'm a stream monitor as a volunteer, and this year, the water body that I monitor has been pretty much dry throughout the year. And in speaking with my counterparts, they've commented similarly in the watershed around here, but also statewide, it's becoming a trend, and it's kind of tied in with the development in the communities where there's, you know, kind of a rapid construction of housing projects and so on, like multi-unit housing, where there's not a lot of consideration given to the rainfall being able to return to the groundwater because of the paving, and just the policy clash of the development is under state law. One of the ways that communities are allowed to raise property tax revenue, but then it comes in conflict with actually allowing the hydrogeologic cycle to kind of play out normally. So we're seeing water bodies kind of dry up statewide, and that's been shared with me by counterparts throughout the state.
Pat, thanks a lot for the call. And Jim, I know monitoring water quality and water quantity are both important issues here, especially if we're seeing cycles of drought and heavy rainfall.
Yeah, I appreciate Pat's comments there. I also appreciate that she's involved in citizen science monitoring of our rivers and streams. That's so important. So a couple thoughts there. It does heighten the conflict between development and preservation. But, you know, at the same time, there are a lot of good solutions that can allow development to proceed while still protecting our hydrogeologic cycle, right? There's a lot of green infrastructure that we see a lot out west, but maybe we need to get better at doing that here in Wisconsin. Things like, recharge areas. So we make sure that the water that's falling, especially when it comes in more intense bursts, has a chance to set on the ground and then slowly percolate down and to regenerate that aquifer. So we see things like rain gardens, for example. A lot of college campuses, I know our campus has several rain gardens that can actually be extremely beautiful, utilizing native species, which is a benefit to biodiversity. So there's so many potentially good solutions here to the problem that she cites, which is very real, right? And while it's not exclusively a climate change issue, it has a lot to do with how we develop. How we develop has a big impact on mitigating those problems or adapting to the extreme rainfall events.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to UW-Eau Claire Public Health and Environmental Studies Professor Jim Bolter about the present and future impact of climate change here in Wisconsin and efforts to mitigate that. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How big a concern is climate change for you? Are you seeing its impact already here in Wisconsin, maybe your own community? Join in with your observations, your questions for our guest at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk now with Jim Bolter, professor and chair of the Department of Public Health and Environmental Studies at UW-Eau Claire. He is with us today to talk about how climate change affects Wisconsin now and what could happen in the future as the U.S. government's Global Change Research Program released its latest climate assessment report. Let's go back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Chris is with us now in Belmont. Chris, hi.
Hi. I actually have two questions. The first is about 20 years ago, I read an article that stated that by the year 2100, Madison's temperatures would be comparable to what Miami's are today. And I'm curious what your opinion is on that or if you have any data. And my second is there are some people that believe that the temperature increase is just due to an interstadial period. And I'm curious as to what your opinion is on that also.
Chris, thanks for the call. First, that second point first, that idea that we're just in a period between glacial expansions, I believe is what Chris is referring to. So the warm-up is maybe normal and natural Earth cycle. Jim, what do you say to that thought?
Yeah, so I mean, the interglacial cycles are real. We have records of them in ice cores dating back over 800,000 years. The problem with that particular thought is that we are currently in an interglacial. So if you look at the historical record, you would expect periods of cold and warm to alternate. And we're already in the warm. So the fact that it's now starting to warm dramatically more so actually puts us into a climate paradigm, which we really haven't seen on this planet. Certainly for 800,000 years, if you look at the ice cores, but if you look at some other records, we're actually, I think, about 3.2 million years. We're well into the millions of years that, since we've seen this kind of warming.
Chris also mentioned the idea that we could have, you know, southern Florida temperatures in southern Wisconsin by the end of this century. Is that a thought? Like, if things get really out of whack, we could see that kind of change?
You know, I'm not seeing the projections that would suggest that particular outcome. If you, Wisconsin Institute on Climate Change Impacts, also known as WICI out of Madison, has done some really nice work on modeling for this. And last time I looked at that, it was more like Arkansas, sort of Missouri, actually more like Missouri, I think, by 2100, depending on the projection, right? And the projection depends entirely upon, more than anything else, upon what human actions are, how effectively we mitigate our impact on the climate. So a worst case scenario would be sort of like Missouri, sort of Kansas, Missouri sort of thing. Not as much like a Florida, again, because the climate in Florida is so heavily marine dependent. I think that would be less likely as well.
Thanks for the call, Chris. Tim joins us now in Winchester. Tim, hi.
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 Yeah. I'm a cross-country skier in northern Vilas County, and we barely have any snow here.
Have you seen, have you been skiing for a long time, Tim? Have you seen changes over the years?
Yes, I've skied 25 Berkeys, and this is one of the lowest snow years so far. You know, it might change on us, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Tim, thanks for the call. Jim, are we noticing things like later initial snowfalls? You mentioned later icing over ponds and lakes. Are we seeing that late start to winter kind of concern?
Yeah, not just the late start, as Chris mentions. And I've been up to the Berkey. I can't say I'm not the athlete he is, so I've never skied it, but I've been up there for it. And it's not just a late start. It's that, you know, a lot of times, and he's experienced this obviously many times in the past decade or so, we get rainfall on top of snowpack, and it just completely destroys the snowpack. So either you're not getting the precipitation. We're not seeing overall less, we're not projecting rather overall less wintertime precipitation as a really strong model outcome. But because it's much more frequently at warmer temperatures, it means it translates into less snowpack. And this is, of course, not just a northern Wisconsin thing. The entire ski industry is quite concerned about this. There's a lot of professional skiing organizations that have been really out in front in advocating for climate policy, because they see really an existential threat to their sport that they love. To northern Wisconsin, that has more than just aesthetic concerns, right? There's an enormous economic impact to the loss of that snowpack, not just for skiing and the Birkebeiner, which are huge impacts in their community, but also for snow machines and all the rest, and the tourism industry up north. So it's a deep concern, and I share it with your caller. It saddens me personally, but I find it concerning too for the state.
Tim, thanks a lot for that call. Jim, before we run out of time, I want to talk about some other human potential impacts of climate change. People have raised concerns that less harsh winters and warmer nighttime temperatures, things like that, could expand the range for different kinds of diseases that can affect humans and other mammals in the state. How big a concern is that?
Oh, it's a huge concern. I was just looking at data in that NCA5 report, that National Climate Assessment, and looking at, for example, Lyme disease counts by state from 2000 to 2019. And, you know, Wisconsin has the largest increase in Lyme disease counts of the entire Midwest, followed by Minnesota. And we also know that Lyme disease is vastly underreported. It's the most common vector-borne disease in the United States right now, and has really, really awful consequences for a lot of people. In addition to that, we're seeing, you know, other vector-borne diseases in the southern part of the state, that even from mosquito-borne diseases. And that's something that we're, that public health departments are watching very closely, but it is certainly a projection into the future that we're going to see more of what we would normally consider to be tropical diseases. Southern United States, of course, experiencing that quite strongly already.
In just our last minute or so, we've got this big international conference going on, the new report that we've been talking about here in the U.S. Are you optimistic, Jim, that policy and behavior changes are going to start happening and at least avoiding the worst case climate change scenarios?
Am I optimistic? It, as we're trying to wrap up the call, right? That's a hard question to ask. Is it possible? Yes. The models show us that it is possible. One of my favorite quotes that I utilize a lot is, we don't lack the technology. We don't lack the knowledge. We actually don't lack the economic wherewithal. We don't even lack the policy models to pull it off. What we really seem to lack is the will, political and otherwise. Do we have that will at the international level? We will see. COP28 in Dubai is an interesting setting, and this, that's a whole nother conversation. Mm-hmm. But I think it's drawing attention, even though I think they're maybe sweeping some of the need to eliminate fossil fuels under the rug at that conference. We are really seeing a lot of attention being paid to methane as an important greenhouse gas, a very important greenhouse gas. We're seeing more conversations about the health impacts of climate change. And we're also seeing how our food systems adversely affect climate change, and how our food systems can evolve to both withstand climate change and also to mitigate our impacts on the climate.
Jim, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thanks so much.
That's James Bolter, professor of chemistry, chair of the Department of Public Health and Environmental Studies at UW-Eau Claire, with us today to look at the impacts of climate change in Wisconsin. Tomorrow on The Morning Show with Kate Archer Kent, It's Nice Work If You Can Get It, dig into the art and science behind cheese tasting. Learn from the pros tomorrow morning at 7:30 here on the Ideas Network. Last week on the show, we invited you to share some of the things you do to mark the changing of the season, from fall to winter, Thanksgiving to Christmas, or to the holiday season in general. This weekend, I did another one of my annual things, by which I mean I joined in a thing that somebody else organizes every year. A friend of mine hosts an annual gathering to make a wide variety of Norwegian cookies. I always look forward to it. She makes all the dough, has all the recipes and the equipment and the knowledge. Then the rest of us come over and do the parts that are hard to mess up. I only mess it up a little. When I have to turn dough into crescent or wreath shapes, they end up being crescent-like or wreath-like. My favorite is the krumkaka, which are pressed thin in a kind of waffle iron arrangement, then wrapped into cones. A friend of mine and I do those every year. Makes us feel like tough guys working with the burning hot stuff. I got by with only one minor burn this year. Plus, I think I singed off some of my fingerprints. Good time to do some crime. Plus, I ate lots of cookies and brought some more home. So all in all, great way to kick off December. This is Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we're nearing the end of the window to enroll in health insurance through the Affordable Care Act Marketplace. A health insurance expert joins us to help navigate the open enrollment process. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about a pro athlete who recently moved back to Wisconsin.
Janelle McCarville's WNBA career included plenty of highlights, including a championship in 2013. The 6'2" center also played internationally in Italy, China, and Sweden. Her playing career came to an end in 2022, but then she returned to her hometown in Wisconsin. She wound up coaching high school girls basketball in Stevens Point and is now living in the same house she grew up in. WPR's Rob Menser talked with McCarville about her life as a pro athlete.
Bring it in, and let's get going, all right?
Knock out three, one, two, three, smash!
My name is Janelle McCarville. I am the head coach of the Stevens Point Area Senior High Girls Basketball Team. This is my first year as head coach. I have played professionally in the WNBA for 9 years. I've played overseas for 15 years with numerous championships in numerous countries.
Here we go, next group!
I grew up in Custer, Wisconsin, two bars and a post office. Went to Stevens Point High School. I had so much support from the family and cousins that I don't think I would have made it without them. But I was a farm kid, you know, so like it was just action on the farm, playing with the brothers. I enjoyed soccer. So the U.S. Olympic team had won the World Cup. I remember where I was when they won it. I think Brandi Chastain hit the penalty kick, took her shirt off, waved it around her head. You know, first time female had ever done that. It was almost, you know, indecent exposure for certain people at the time. But oh my God, as a young female athlete, that was my role model right there. The U.S. Olympic team, soccer team.
Bring it back!
Basketball was the last thing I picked up, truly. I really only started in 7th or 8th grade. You know, if you were into something, you had to be into it because mom had to sacrifice all the time to drive you to town, waste, you know, 2 hours waiting for you in town. So we really had to buckle down.
Set it back up with whoever drove and whoever was behind.
Then went to University of Minnesota. I was the only person that year as a freshman. They only recruited me. I dominated. I won freshman of the year in the Big Ten. And from that year on, we never had a losing season in Minnesota.
McCarville, one-on-one, goes right around Hunter and lays it in.
That's big time. I mean, this young woman has been the best player in the NCAA tournament. She has been sensational.
The WNBA was there, but not so popular or well-known. A European basketball career was never even thought of. You know, I didn't know anything of it. So I was just hoping I could, you know, continue because for the love of the game. Going into the draft, I didn't know anything. So me and my family, mother and father, went to New York to be in the draft. And draft day, you know, I'm just sitting in the room with everybody else, and all of a sudden they call your name. And it just so happened I was number one. I was taken to Charlotte, the Charlotte Sting.
Comes up with, look at this
play.
Oh
my goodness, Janelle McCarville. That'll be the best play she makes all season long.
And probably the best play that we'll see all day today.
Yep. Everything grew as I got older. I just learned. I improved mind, body, and soul as to what needed to happen, and it created habits. You know, 21 days makes a habit, and you do these things long enough, it just becomes part of your life. And I guess that's where I am today and why I've been so successful is I dove headfirst and gave everything my best.
Ready? Go!
We won the WNBA championship in 2013 with the Minnesota Lynx. It was one of the most trying years of my life, actually. Coaches push you to the brink, and this year, it was the beginning of that. I don't know. You have your lifelong dream of winning a championship, and the only thing I did, partied with the girls, and went back to the room and watched film. You know, I was like ready to do it all over again. I'm not satisfied with just this one. So then, you know, already thinking about next year and taking the other one and the preparation that's needed for it. So it's hard to live in the moment.
Hello, everybody. Please have a seat. Welcome to the White House, and give it up for our special guest, the Minnesota Lynx. Hey.
So I got to go meet Barack Obama. You know, he shook my hand and said, oh, Janelle, I love your passes. You know, like, holy shit, the President of the United States knows my name and knows what I excel at. You know, like, that's crazy to me. Like, then again, it hits home, like, wow, I've come a long way and done a lot of things, and basketball has truly provided all of it.
WPR's Rob Menser brought us that story on basketball player and coach Janelle McCarville, a Wisconsin native. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lola and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Now, the deadlines to enroll in health insurance through Medicare or the Affordable Care Act marketplace are approaching. There are a lot of different wrinkles, so how can we make sure we find the plan that's right for us? A health insurance enrollment expert is here to help us navigate the waters of open enrollment and help you choose the right plan and provider for your situation. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you shopping? Are you going through this process right now? What questions do you have about it? If you've gone through open enrollment, either through the Medicare plan or through the Affordable Care Act, what did you find confusing or difficult? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Sadie Tischer is the owner and an independent broker with Wisconsin Health Insurance Advocate, LLC. Sadie, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks, Rob.
Well, a couple different deadlines coming up. I want to start with the one that's coming up sooner. Hopefully people have this in the works now. Just a few days for people who are changing parts of their coverage under Medicare. Now, this is what people call Medicare Advantage and the drug coverage. What is at play for people who are currently Medicare recipients?
So yes, for anyone who is on or wishes to be on a Medicare Advantage plan or a prescription drug only plan, the deadline to switch for 2024 is this Thursday, December 7th.
How do people do that? And I guess do it in an expedited way because they just have a few days left.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are a lot of independent brokers in every community that can help people through that process. There's also the state health insurance program, the SHIP helpline. And then people can also call 1-800-MEDICARE. I would advise people, if they are calling the 1-800 number, just to be really clear about what providers are in network, because those call center folks from Medicare just won't be as familiar with our local providers. So I would just urge people to be specific about their doctors if they do call the 1-800 number.
Now, some people might have a Medicare Part A, that's the hospital part, as I understand it, Part B, medical insurance. What goes in the decision of, you know, do I need to get the Medicare Advantage on top of that?
Sure. So yeah, some people have original Medicare Part A and B with or without a supplement plan. And those are folks who often add just a prescription drug plan on it so that they have some prescription drug coverage. People who want to take sort of an alternative route can consider a Medicare Advantage plan. So a Medicare Advantage plan is basically a way to privatize your Medicare. So it's run through a private insurance company. Typically, you do have to go within a network, but there are some basic exemptions for that. And it's a way of changing how you pay for your Medicare. So most Medicare Advantage plans have set co-pays for services versus original Medicare, which has some deductibles, and then typically you pay 20% after that.
Talking to Sadie Tischer with Wisconsin Health Insurance Advocate, LLC, looking at enrollment for Medicare Advantage and drug programs. And coming up, Marketplace, Affordable Care Act Marketplace. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Sadie, I think when a lot of people are seeing headlines about open enrollment this time of year, it's the Affordable Care Act Marketplace. First of all, who should care? Who should be paying attention to the Affordable Care Act Marketplace?
Sure. People who should pay attention to the Affordable Care Act or Marketplace are people who don't have access to insurance through another source. So people who don't get Medicare, Medicaid, or insurance through work or a parent's plan, people who buy insurance on their own, basically.
And there is a category of people who may be surprised. Medicaid has had this process over the last few years because of the pandemic where you didn't, as I understand it, Sadie, you didn't need to re-enroll. You didn't need to reprove your eligibility. That's done. There's this process called the unwinding now. What should people watch for if they had been on Medicaid for a while that's wrapping up and maybe now it's time to check out that marketplace?
Absolutely. Great point. So Medicaid coverage did auto-renew for people. They weren't checking income. So all of this year since June, we've been seeing people having reviews. As I understand it, it goes through March. So many people have been reviewed, but there are still some who need to be reviewed. So keep an eye on your mail for people who have Medicaid and you have not yet gotten a review. I'd really encourage you to check out your access. So that's access.wi.gov. There you can check the status of your Medicaid and your renewal date. So people want to pay good attention to that because Medicaid typically just sends one renewal notice out to folks. They'll send a notice if a person has lapsed, but you really prefer to do that review before you've lapsed. So if you haven't gotten a notice, it's probably a good idea at this point to check when your renewal date might be.
Now, there's two things people might be thinking about with the marketplace. Well, there's a lot of things, but two upfront things. One, am I eligible at all to join in? And two, people might look at the monthly cost and say, I can't afford that. Well, there's another eligibility. There are subsidies, more generous subsidies got extended at least through 2025, I think, under an act of Congress a couple of years back. Can you talk about subsidies and who might be eligible for those for coverage under the marketplace?
Great question. Yes. So the American Recovery Act plan did extend subsidies But then the Inflation Reduction Act, which was passed last year, actually extended those subsidies through 2026. So we will see cost savings at least until 2026. And what's really great is that we are now capped, individuals are now capped at 8.5% of their income for the second silver plan. So they may end up paying more than that if they choose a different plan. But as they go second silver or lower, that they are capped at 8.5%. So a lot of people are qualifying for some sort of subsidy on the marketplace that we really haven't seen in prior years prior to the ARPA passing. It's really exciting. It's been a cost savings. Insurance is still quite expensive. We just know this is true in every single sector, but some people can get a good plan for an affordable price.
We're talking to Sadie Tischer, owner and independent broker with Wisconsin Health Insurance Advocate, LLC. She's giving us tips on choosing and enrolling in the right health insurance before the end of open enrollment. Talk a little bit about Medicare's open enrollment, just a few days left on that. And now talking about the Affordable Care Act marketplace. You got a few more weeks on that one. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Are you weighing your options right now? Are you confused about bronze versus silver versus gold versus platinum? Do you have questions about how to shop for this? Or maybe you've got a loved one who you think might be eligible. What do you want to know that they need to know? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We continue our conversation with Sadie Tischer, owner and independent broker with Wisconsin Health Insurance Advocate, LLC, talking about how to enroll in health insurance through Medicare or the Affordable Care Act marketplace before upcoming deadlines. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you receiving coverage through the marketplace? How has it worked for you? Was it tricky to figure out if you were eligible for subsidies? Do you have questions about how and whether to make changes or to sign up in the first place? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller. Jim is with us in Cedarburg. Jim, hi.
Thanks, Rob. Good show as always. My question is about the Affordable Care Act. Signing up, they look at income. Now, does that just constitute, is it just made up of wages, or is it things like trust and disbursements? And is it what, based off of 2022 W-2s, or I mean, not W-2s, but 1040s? Can you talk about that? Thanks.
Jim, thanks for the call. What income counts and what year's income counts when we're applying for the Affordable Care Act marketplace and possible subsidies, Sadie?
Yes. So it is your projected taxable income. So typically we want to use what you expect to receive for the year that you are applying. So most people that we're helping right now, we are asking, what do you think your 2024 income will be? For a lot of people, they can use their 2023 income as a guidance, but we are actually projecting forward. And what counts is taxable income. So ultimately you want the amount that you put on the marketplace, income box to match what you file on your tax return. There's a bit of wiggle room. So the tax credit can go up or down based on how accurate you were. And essentially you either pay more on taxes or you get some back if you weren't perfectly accurate. So we don't harp on people about being perfectly accurate. We just want to get to your best possible estimate.
Thanks a lot for the call, Jim. Matt is with us now in Milwaukee. Matt, hi.
Hello.
What'd you want to ask about?
I had a question. So I've been using the Affordable Care Act for a number of years now, and one of the problems I've ran into is there seem to be a multitude of different plan options. You know, for example, you know, one company will have silver plan, you know, we'll just say A, B, C, D, E, and F, and they all look very similar with minute differences. So I've always had trouble kind of navigating through those, seeing which plan is best fit for me. And what I've ended up doing is making up an Excel sheet and then just plugging in all the numbers of my medications and then the different plan coverages, you know, and that's 2 or 3 hours of me just punching in numbers sometimes to find out what plan works best for me, which I think is pretty much excessive for, you know, most people Matt, to do. So I have a hard.
Thanks a lot for the call. Matt, bring us up a great point, Sadie. There's different kinds of silver plans. There's also bronze, silver, gold, platinum, and so on. How can someone looking at this compare what in some cases might look like apples and oranges to figure out what's going to be the best marketplace coverage for them?
Yes. And Matt, I could not agree more. There are, just for an example, Milwaukee County, where I reside, we have 112 plans. It is an excessive amount of plans. The differences can look extremely minor. What differences we actually see are between companies, and not just in price, but in network. So the first thing I really suggest is that people check the network that they're going into. We have some big carriers this year, United Healthcare, Anthem, for example. Those are some bigger names. Don't assume that the network is wide because there's a big company name. You always want to check the network. And then Matt, you are going definitely above and beyond. Mm-hmm. I wish everyone had the time and capability to do that. But I agree, there are minor differences and they have flooded us with plans.
Matt, thanks a lot for the call. Can you give a couple quick clarifications? I think a thing a lot of people want to compare is, you know, the deductibles on one plan for another versus the copays for one plan for another, and then the premiums, how do those all tend to balance out?
Yes. So I think what you want to do as an individual is look at what you are most likely to use. So for example, if you know you have a couple of doctor's appointments during the year or even multiple doctor's appointments, be careful to look for a plan that you have a doctor copay before the deductible applies. We sometimes are finding that specialist copays are subject to the deductible, and that can really catch people off guard. So before you sign up for any plan, look at the summary of benefits that is available in any of our major quotes software that agents use, Navigate, anyone else. If you use it yourself on healthcare.gov, look carefully at the summary of benefits before you click that enroll button. And just do what Matt did, in at least an easier sense of going through what do you think you're likely to use, what is the cost, and the major question is it subject to the deductible or not? Because some of those deductibles are incredibly high.
Thanks again for that call, Matt. We'll go to Jim now in Black River Falls. Jim, hi.
Yo, hi. I have an enrollment period question.
Mm-hmm. Go for it.
For some reason, the enrollment period is just 3 months at the end of the year. But if you lose your job, I have a family member who's going to lose his job in probably April. The employer is closing business. Is that grounds to enroll at that time?
Jim, thanks for the call. Sadie, I know there are some exceptions to the open enrollment period, some kind of major change. Does losing one's job count as something that lets you enroll outside of that period?
Yes. When you lose some sort of other qualifying coverage, Medicare, Medicaid, or job-based insurance, you have a 60-day window in which to enroll in coverage. You want to be sure to do that as soon as you can, because coverage never goes backwards. It always starts the first of the following month. So yes, your family member will have a special enrollment period. When they know they're losing coverage, they can actually apply up to 60 days before that loss of coverage. This open enrollment period, which is actually only a month and a half, 45 very stressful days for us brokers. This just applies to people who already have the marketplace and need to renew their coverage.
Jim, thanks a lot for that call. John is with us now in Marinette. John, hi.
How are you doing? I got 74 years old. I've been on Medicare for at least 10, 12 years or something. But I'd like to get a supplemental something, but I don't trust anybody. I've been taken advantage of on online stuff so many times, and every time that I even inquire about it, I'll start getting 18, 20, 22 calls a day from insurance agents, and so I just delete them.
John, I gotcha. Sadie, if somebody wants a good Medicare, say, Advantage plan, what's a good, reliable way to, John is worried about being ripped off just in our last half a minute or so.
Sure. Well, of course, I'm biased because I'm an independent broker, but I would suggest that people visit a local independent broker with a physical location of some sort, someone you can actually meet face to face. The other option would be you could call your county's Department on Aging or Aging and Disability Resource Center. They're a disability benefit, elder benefit specialist, disability benefit specialist there who, if they can't help guide you, they usually have a resource for someone local that they know. So there are, use a local resource. And for everyone on any health insurance topic, do not ever put your phone number or out on an internet information contact page. You will get berated with calls for the rest of your life. So John, yeah, be really careful.
Thanks a lot for the call. And Sadie, we'll let you get back to your busy season now.
Thank you, Rob.
That's Sadie Tischer, owner and independent broker with Wisconsin Health Insurance Advocate, LLC. Talk to her about how to navigate health insurance, open enrollment through Medicare or the Affordable Care Act marketplace. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, being single doesn't mean being sad or lonely, according to the author of the new book, Single at Heart, which digs into stories and data behind decisions to remain unmarried, unpartnered, and happy. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Coming up after the news, a Wisconsin-based personal finance expert helps us prepare for budget talk as the holidays approach and gives advice on how to reframe the way we talk and think about money. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time.